Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Commander and Coffee. We're bringing you all things brewing. With me today, I have Max. Say hi,
hello.
Max. And probably the best CDH player, I'll say, in the country. Some say the East Coast. Jorman.
What's up?
This man is unstoppable. I've played against him multiple times, so as Max, he cannot be stopped. He is the GOAT of CDH right now. Do you have any arguments to that, Max?
I don't know. We're pretty even in not in tournament games. In tournament games, he kicks my ass 90% of the time. But outside of that, it's relatively even. We have some of the best Magic games I've ever played, though. I will definitely say that.
Yeah, definitely. It's always fun. It's always a grind. It's always in like round three of tournaments, so it's like either goes to time or someone wins very fast. The games with Max are always great. Also, the games with you, Billy, they're always good.
I'm a little bit further away than you guys, so it does take. It's few and far between, but they are really good games. I remember the first time I played against you at Rip and Ship. We were both in the top four, just hanging out, having a good time.
That was an insane game, only because I tried to go off into a Dranif, and then you and Trent were just so quiet the entire time, let me resolve Breach and everything, and then Trent pushed, and I ripped the Fierce Guardianship off the top, and then we still went to time. That game was insane.
Yeah, that was nuts. So with that, some of your recent accolades are Festival of Nights winner. I know we're a little bit outside of when it happened, but life happens. And just recently you run Bonfire, and in between that you also won the Rip and Ship Tropical Island, was that right?
Yeah, and I top 16 Mox Masters too.
Oh, you know, just casually top 16 Mox Masters.
I'm pretty sure he won the Rip and Ship event prior to that. This man has like just been on fire. I think you've collected more dual lands from winning events than most people have purchased in their lifetime.
Yeah, I've definitely won. Yeah, I've definitely won a lot of those Rip and Ships. I think the one before the Trop, I think that was the one where it was the three Tivits versus the Sisse. But right. The one before that, I definitely won. I definitely won the Underground Sea. Yeah, that was insane.
Right, that's the one that JR knocked me out of because he had a greedy fish and didn't counter anything, and I had to spend all my removal.
So much greed in the format right now. So much greed. No one's keeping anything.
I think it's a lot of greed in the open meta, the Rip and Ship meta. People are playing a lot of things way too quickly. But I think that's why people like yourself and JR and those Turbonauts players do so well when they come into those events, is because they just look for the opening, take their greedy shot, and by that point everybody's like spent out their creatures and is on too much of a mid-range list to really answer anything about it.
Yeah, I think it's just like a question of like when to overextend yourself, when to use your advantage. And I also feel like some Nos players, they do know how to create that window, whereas mid-range players just like jam a whole bunch of card advantage, which is where like, you know, someone can just like push into heuristic study or like play a defense grid and make them have it, and then they just don't because they spent all their mana trying to set up card advantage engines. So it's definitely weird, that question between like open metas and like teching for Rip and Ship versus like teching for like 100-something player tournament.
So that's a great segue right there. So you've played in multiple Rip and Ships, you've played in multiple open metas, and you've played in multiple, we'll just say 64 plus major tournaments, whether it's Festival, Punt City, you know. So you didn't go to Silicon Dynasty, did you? But I know you went to Cookout, multiple of the Eminence events. How do you feel that the meta is actually like shaping up? I mean, has it changed since, you know, Punt City 1 to now?
I was at Punt City 2, and I definitely think the meta has shifted with things like Orcish Bowmaster and like Talion and the One Ring. I definitely, It's weird. Sometimes I feel like calling it a mid-range meta, but I don't feel like we're in like a completely mid-range meta because turbo decks can still do good. And I don't know what I would like to say determines the meta. I feel like obviously people are playing into those like heuristic mystic play patterns that everyone says. I call those like basic bitch CDH tendencies because I feel like everyone is just like keeping T1 Remora. Or like keeping T2 Vamp Tutor, like play Mana Crypt, play Rhystic Study. So it's like, I guess, I wouldn't call that a mid-range strategy. I just say a lot of people are just trying to set up card advantage engines very, very early and then ride those to victory. Whereas like the turbo players are just like, oh, I'm just trying to jam the moment I can jam. And I feel like Stacks is even... I feel like Stacks or Stacks players are realizing that they have to play blue because they keep getting blown out. So like then there's this whole new wave of like attrition, Demir control players, which is cool. Actually, I'm not gonna lie. Last night I killed someone with that meme betrayal, Bloodchief Ascension combo. That was really cool. Being able to just like, oh, I have a live Bloodchief Ascension. I'm gonna cast meme betrayal. I'm not gonna cast any spells off of the meme betrayal. I'm going to just end my turn. Okay, you have 20 cards going to your graveyard. You're dead. That's 40 damage. That was insane.
I was not aware that that was a thing, but that sounds fantastic. As far as like the people going for turn one fish or advantage hands, it's like I don't even think that's just mid-range players. I've seen Rog'Sai players doing that. Like you see your first two hands and they're just not good, and then at that point once you're at five cards you're just like mulling over and over again until you hit that hard card advantage spot, because like cards are our resource, right? We can't play the game without them. So I think everybody right now is really, really reliant on both Fish and Remora and any other seeming card advantage that they can get. It's kind of like the definition of the format right now is just drawing as many cards as you can, and drawing cards essentially wins you the game. Like when you have 15 cards in your hand to go off, you're pretty much like you should be winning it there, right?
Yeah, I agree. And then there's like the decks that don't necessarily care about the Bowmaster coming out. So it's like they'll just continue to draw cards and let the Bowmaster blow out all the creature decks. And they're just like, thanks, as long as I don't die to a Bowmaster, I can just continue to accrue card advantage and just win because my win is so like low to the ground, or I can get there with a Dockside or Rituals. So yeah, definitely to tie it back into Billy's question, I feel like this meta is in like this weird like limbo space where everyone is just trying to draw cards, though. I feel like that's the name of the game. And even many people that bitch about Bowmaster, I feel like even they're just dropping card advantage engines early. So, and drawing into Bowmaster. So, does it really matter? I don't know.
I think there's no way to play around Bowmaster. Like, as I said before, it's like cards are your resource system. Without your resource system, not doing anything is just not really like caring. And we have 40 life. So as long as your creatures aren't super impactful and most of the creatures that we care about are ETB based, you really like shouldn't care about Bowmaster. Yes, it's a strong card. Yes, it can be impactful when you're trying to run creature strategies, but like the format says no right now. So until we have an answer or antithesis to Bowmaster, like you're just leaning into it because it's going to chip everybody down. If you're an Adnos player, you probably still don't care because you're going to Adnos into your card advantage. And, like, just don't play creature strategies right now that overextend into creatures, because most of those creatures aren't drawing you resources anyway. And, like, having them in the field is a liability versus having them in your hand.
Right. Or you play, like, a low to the ground creature combo where, like, Devoted Druid just gets enabled by Swift Recon. And you're just like, all right, yeah, I won the game. Or Machine God Effigy. You're just like, my creature is just a distraction to me actually trying to end the game.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the biggest things that I grew up learning in all forms of magic was pretty much the things that rule magic in general are time, card advantage, and efficiency. And time is how many turns it takes to for you to do your thing. Card advantage as well. You know, how many cards do I get to see before my more than my opponent? Because the more cards that you're going to see over your opponent, you're going to win more often. And then the other one is efficiency. Using your mana efficiently. That's more important, like limited and stuff like that. But it works out here too. Your efficient spells, your efficient casting, and how efficient you are with utilizing those spells and stuff like that more than your opponents. And that's really what it breaks down to overall. And, you know, some people tend to just be like, to Jorman's point of, you know, oh, snap keep a fish. Like, some people will snap keep a fish and just be like, yeah, I'll get there through it and have like six lands and a fish. And be like, yeah, that's fine. You know what I mean? But then they don't look at the table and go, oh, there's two creature decks at the table. I'm not going to get to draw off the fish, you know? So I do definitely agree with that. I definitely like how the idea that we are in between metas kind of shifting. I've noticed personally that it has slowed down quite a bit and has been more creature focused, because you can also see in the counter spells, we're getting off of the counter spells that are not fully off of the counter and sorcery type ones, but like we're getting to more of ones that take care of creatures and creature things. And we're seeing the rise of different types of creature based commanders. Tivit's a huge one right now that I think that's coming ahead. I've been trying to pick up my jaw off the floor with the Meme Betrayal Bloodchief Ascension thing, because Bloodchief Ascension was one of my favorite cards growing up. So we're gonna have a conversation later.
Same. Yeah.
That's weird. It's so cool. Like, you had that dude that played Nimrus, and then that like created this entire new wave, I guess. Like, I want to call it of like attrition in Dimir. So like the like looking at the Dimir color pop like that, it's really cool. The fact that you can like play those Shieldred Edict effects or play those Instant Blood effects early to try to tempo people from like casting those early Timnas or getting out those early Thrasios, it's like a cool way to like look at the color pie. And then it's like, then you think the Talion came out and they're like, okay, cool. So let's take this like a step like deeper, and then we will then talk about how we can like pressure the life totals, right? So if you think about the stacks pieces that they're playing, or like the, like even you naming Tivit, Billy, it's like you think about the slots and how Tivit uses slots. So you have Silver Bullets like Grafdigger's Cage, you have your Curse Totems, right? And then you think about the way these Dimir decks want to use their slots. It's like, all right, if my commander is already making you lose two life and is going to have me trigger Bloodchief Ascension at the end of the turn, and if we want to play things like Cage to stop early Underworld Breach attempts or to stop like you from tutoring in a Dockside, then if cards are inevitably going to go into your graveyard because we want access to our Meme Betrayals late game and we don't want to run a Dolly Voidwalker because Timna isn't our commander, then we need to like look at our cards choices and our slots differently. So like having that attrition, like I just feel like having that attrition game plan in the late game is going to be insane, and it's going to like decide a lot of games because people aren't going to know what's happening. The Talion's going to like, you're going to take so much chip damage from the Talion. The Bloodchief Ascension is going to be live, but it's not really going to be affecting you until you're at like 15 life. Like, I feel like that Talion, yeah, I feel like Talion being introduced to the meta is like very, very cool. That's why I call it Dimir Kimball, because it's like adding that level of like pressuring people's life total to the format is cool. I think you have to be like a very smart control player to be able to pull that off, like chip damaging people and then trying to like end, because you don't want to like throw the game in like a bad direction. You don't want like the Adnos player to untap the person that you tried to kill with like a Meme Betrayals at one life. They flash in their Bowmaster, they kill the control player, and then they go off. Like, it, you just have to be like a very smart control player. But I do think it is opening a lot of cool strategies in the format that I guess are taking advantage of these like 75 minute rounds. Because if people are saying the stacks is being pushed out, then having this new era of control and having this new like, oh, okay, we're going to play stacks pieces early, and then we're going to rely on our counter spells and our commander for chip damage later. That's like really cool. And it takes advantage of this like, okay, we have to punish, not punish, but like we have to make, I guess, like Grixis based decks use their cards more efficiently because A, they don't want to lose them, or B, they don't want to like die in the process of casting spells. So it's like really dope.
I dig that. I was a big old school player of Serku Lantern Control, and I loved it. So I am definitely down for this idea, and I'm very excited because I also pulled one of the nice looking extended art Talions. So yeah, but that's not the deck that you won with, correct?
No. I didn't know they have Talion in the 99. I just wanted I had Metamorphin Phantasmal Image. I copied it maybe like once. Maybe I think I copied it twice over the weekend. It's still good value. And then creature decks taking 4 damage every time they cast a 2-drop is fire. But no, I won Bonfire with Thrasios Vile Smasher, and I won Festival with TNK on Blue Farm.
Hell what? Yeah. So which one do you want to talk about first?
Whichever one you want to talk about, it doesn't matter. They're both cool decks.
Right. Let's go ahead and talk about the deck that you pulled straight out of your ass on a fever dream at 1 a.m. before Bonfire.
Yeah, it was like 4 a.m., but yeah.
It was like 4 a.m. because I got a text at 4 a.m.
Yeah, I sent it to Billy. I sent it to like 3 people, Billy, Fab, and like Harrison, at like 4 in the morning after I brewed it. And I was like, let me know what to cut. I'm going to bed. And I think both of them, all 3 of them probably had work in the morning. And Billy got back to me in the afternoon like, oh yeah, take this out, play this. And I was like, yeah, I want to play Thrasios. I haven't played Thrasios since Flash was in the format.
I mean, there hasn't really been a good reason outside of Kinnan and 5-color piles to play green. It doesn't really offer you a lot compared to the other colors. What, besides Thrasios in that pile, is green that you consider like pivotal or essential that makes it better than just the normal TNK colors?
I think thinking about its ability... So when brewing the deck, I was looking... And I was like, okay, there are slots in TNK that are dedicated to Temna. So when you think about cracking a top deck tutor, when you think about having Dorothy in the deck as a Temna attacker and a way to like pressure storm decks, like you make them use their card advantage differently because they don't want to like pop a Gnaws, get it countered, let you have access to their Gnaws. Then it was like, I feel like I have more space in Thrasios Vile Smasher to like play payoffs, right? So like I can afford to play Praetor's Grass in the deck and Jessica's Will and One Ring. Whereas I fucking TNK, the card quality is so high. And I feel like I need to every card needs to be a tutor to get me where I want to be, or a way to control the board so that it gets back to my turn. I feel like having Thrasios is a backup plan that just like sit there, draw cards, accrue value, chill. If I draw Gnaws, I'm like, cool, come the week, add Gnaws. If I draw like a Neoform, I'm like, cool, here's like a 3-drop that matters. And I also feel like being able to pivot to Dockside combos is cool. Like, I don't know if it's necessary if I think about it, but like having access to like every win con TNK has access to, plus being able to just like slap a Teemer Sabertooth and a Cloudstone Carrier on there and be like, oh, I also win with Dockside is like kind of cool. Because I only have 2 win cons in TNK. So if like Breach and Thork will go away and like I'm getting stacked out and no one has a graveyard for like meme bet, then I'm really like fucked. Whereas like I could just be like Curio, Dockside, infinite mana, my commander is a sink. Which I never actually thought was a good thing. And then I was like, Dockside's a broken card.
Yeah, 100%. And like what also is cool, because so we're talking about cards that you get in green as opposed to in, you know, white with TNK, is like 2 of the cards that stand out to me the most. Calling Ritual, of course. And I'm going to lump these together. Neoform and Eldritch Evolution, basically your prod effect kind of things. Because both of those can get you into a combo piece. So you can Neoform Vile Smasher, which you always have access to, into Teemer Sabertooth, and go off if you have Dockside. Or, you know, vice versa, you could Eldritch into Dockside or Eldritch into Team or Sabertooth from either of your commanders. You know, so you always have access to something like that. Also, Finale and other things. Abrupt Decay is another huge one that I'm personally a big fan of. Unconditional removal. That's pretty hot for me, as long as three or less. I mean, I guess it's not unconditional, but you know what I mean.
I mean, it's pretty valid.
Yeah, it's like only SWAT affects it, yeah. It's pretty, yeah. It's a good piece of removal.
Yeah, because I mean, technically, you also have an extra win condition, which I don't know if you said Dockside, your things in outlet. Well, once you generate infinite mana, not only can you draw your deck with Thrasios, you could also just infinitely flicker Orcish Bowmaster to kill everybody.
Yeah, with Team or Sabertooth.
Yeah.
I thought about that the other day, too. I was like, oh, there's a win con without Thrasios, which is also very cool.
Yeah, because that gets by if you're under a Drannith. That gets by a couple different things, you know what I mean?
Yes. So, yes, I think yesterday, playing casually, was the first time I actually thought I wanted Silence. So I was like, oh, I kind of missed TNK. Only because there was a point where I would have just jammed the Grand Abolisher and won the game. Or just jammed the Silence. But no one had it, so I should have jammed. I ended up realizing like two turns later when someone pushed that no one had counterspells. And I could have jammed anyway. But it's more of a question of like, I didn't have any backup. So I was just like afraid to go for it. Whereas in TNK, I definitely would have just been like, okay, I have a Silence. We can fight over this Silence. You won't have any counter spells for the actual win condition. Here's a win condition. So it's like the play patterns are a little different. I feel like I can make up for that by just like playing a defense grid or a Conqueror's Flail. I'm just being really greedy with my slots right now. I'm not even on Mindbreak Trap, which is very wrong, but I'm just greedy.
So
I was going to comment on that, but... You know, hey, the other thing I wanted to comment on. Sorry, Max, I'll let you finish. I just want to get this out there real quick before I forget. You're not on almost every Thrasios player's wet dream card, Seaborn Muse.
Yeah, no, I chose. So the reason why I played this deck was because my friend Mateo, he's a Italian player. He decided to pick up TNT. Well, he was playing Thrasios Tevesh. And then I told him, I think you should play Thrasios Timna. Because it suits like your playstyle more. And it's just like adding counter spells to tie him. And then he made TNT, and I was like, I want to play Thrasios. And he was like, yeah, but you don't not want to play red. And then I went home, and I was like, you're right. I don't not want to play red. So I was like, fuck it. Thrasios Vow Smasher. I get to play Dockside, I get to play Breach, and I get to play Thrasios. And that's really all I cared about. I didn't want to play like medium green. So I chose not to play Seaborn Muse. I chose not to play Training Grounds and just be really greedy with my slots and add as many payoffs as I can to try to like take advantage of every creature tutor for early Dockside, every ritual that would be put in my hand. Can just win outright off of one of the payoffs. I chose not to play Necro or Beseech the Mirror only because in those like 3-4 like 10 hands that I saw, it just looked like it messed with the mulligans enough. And obviously since I made like the night before the tournament, I didn't really have enough time to like test the mulligans. So I was like, whatever, cut these, add some like, you know, add just regular good cards and see what happens.
So I have 2 points. First, would you consider just making this like Kenrith for, because you still have the mana outlet in the command zone, and then you still get to add white and trim like what little fat there is here just for some silence effects and like the Savine's Reclamation and those like really good top of the line white spells that you can add here just to push it over the edge.
I feel like, so I was talking to Mateo today, and I was like, and I was dreaming about like 5C Thrasios, and I was like, they'll never make a partner that's a shard, because everyone would just play five color Thrasios because you get access to like the devoted druid lines and you get to like do a lot of stuff with a more, I guess, like not as specific type of sync that Kenrith is. I feel like I wouldn't make this a Kenrith list. I feel like it just plays like Rock'sai with green. Like it just like, it's just Jund Turbo Nause. And green is the support color. And it's, I like, I just kept calling it Wet Jund and I kept calling it like Corvold with counter spells all weekend. Malcolm called it like Dirty Teamer because it's like, it's just fine Dockside, cast your payoffs. And I feel like the white spells would like finishing the breach line. So like Savine's is dead early. It adds for like cool intuition piles. Like I feel like, again, I feel like white is more like a layered mid-range like kind of support color. So like you're casting intuition into a stacks pod. You put your dress down in the graveyard. You Savine's your dress down back. The Archon's turned off. You go off a breach. Whereas like this is just like, I'm casting an Adnaz. I'm going to Thoracle Consult. I'm casting an Adnaz. I'm going to breach immediately. And it's like, it can also control the board because you have access to Deluge. You have access to Fire Covenant. So I think the white cards would actually make it a little bit like less consistent because you're going to have like Dead Silences in your hand. You're going to have the Savines in your hand. The Grand Abolisher doesn't put you anywhere you need to go. And the density of payoffs right now, especially with how greedy the format is and feeding Dockside, I think it's probably the reason why I won the tournament. Like, to be honest, just how greedy the format is.
That's very fair. Yeah, the other thought that I had was I was looking at this is like, you took your Enola roots and just made it smoke a shit ton of weed. Like, it's really...
That's a fact, bro. It's really just Jund Turbo Nause,
yeah.
Bro.
It's just your Enola list sends a bunch of weird creatures and putting in green to find those creature payoffs, and like you're going back to your Enola roots in a really just weird fucked up way.
Yeah, I was like, it's so funny because when I realized it was Turbo Nause, I was like looking at the hands on Moxfield and I was like, it's just a Turbo Nause deck. I'm like, a week ago, I was like, I want to play mid-range. I want to play, like, hardcore mid-range. I like TNK. I like where it's sitting. And then I just made that deck, and I was like, this is fast as fuck. I just kept seeing, like, one land T2s. Like, just one landers that would just win the game off of an early Dockside or, like, T1 Birds, T2 Culling Writ. Or T2, like, Culling the Week or... like Rock Culling Ritual. It was like the hands were insane. The rituals in Jund, I just forgot how good that was. My first time casting Culling Ritual in a tournament. It definitely is a very good piece of acceleration.
It's a feeling, I could tell you that. Playing it, I play it in my Najeela list, and it's a whole mood.
Yeah, it's one of the cards that I do wish I had access to in Tivit, but we don't have anything nearly that good in Esper Color Pie.
Yeah. Nah, bro. Play Tevesh Ishai, man. Play Humility. Let's go.
I refuse to play Humility. That deck is not real. I will stand by Mikey and say that it's ridiculous. Thinking that Humility is going to be good just to stop like Bowmaster, like great, you stop Thoracle. Half the time, the Rog and Turbo players are going for the overcomplicated breach lines anyway. They're not going for the Thoracle wins, and like if they have to mill you out, they mill you out. Like, I was thinking about Tevesh Ishai for a bit, just as a regular Esper, like more Hate Bearsy deck, like almost thinking about bringing back Aether Vial. Just because I think like flashing in creatures is really good, especially like to stop things like ETBs and whatnot. But I don't think Humility is where it's at right now. I think playing Murderbird just so you can get the turn one Ishai very strong, and then Tevesh in a late game to like draw into your finishers is great. but I think that's more of a hate bear deck that doesn't really have a place right now. And if you're playing humility into this format, I think it's just a bad time.
I feel like with these new Dimir control like aspects, I think the deck can sit in a really good position. Like you play your Talion, you play your Blood Chief Ascension. I hear the Azorius people are like trying to talk about Humility and Agatha's Soul Cauldron because of the way Airs work. So if you play Humility first and then you exile something with Agatha's Soul Cauldron, you have a 2/2 that has all the abilities and then everything else on the battlefield is a 1/1. Also, if you play Humility and Ishai is still the biggest creature because it doesn't lose the +1/+1 counters. So like I just feel like it is very slow though. And I feel like it would take a lot of curving. I feel like the pilot would have to curve the deck to fit in to winning in the 75 minutes. I do agree though, like for more tournament play, you probably want to steer clear of like the Humility, Agatha Soul Cauldron shenanigans and just focus on like the Talion, attrition, kill, like make everyone's life total become like shit type of play style.
Yeah, I think that sequencing needs to be way too specific, and you have to have the right combination of creatures in your yard, because if Humility's out first, you can deal with things with Agatha Soul Cauldron and give them back abilities, sure. If you play Cauldron first, you get nothing. Like, doesn't matter when you exile anything, you get nothing. So, like, it only solves half the problem, and that the deck being too slow, like, prove me wrong, internet, tell me I'm an idiot, and have Humility top an event. Show me a top 16 or a top 4 on EDH top 16. 16. But outside of that, like, you can't sell me on this yet. The same thing with Talion. I think it's a cute flash in the pan that's not going to really hold up long term, because outside of Kinnan right now, two colors is not strong enough. Not playing red in a black-blue shell to have access to Dockside when everyone's just going faster, and not having silence to shut those people off. Like, you don't have enough counter spells to deal with it.
I personally love Humility. It's one of my favorite cards. Being a Stax player and all.
A dirty Stax player. Me loving the card and accepting that it has no place in our current format are two entirely different things.
I do agree. I do agree. I think that's why I think that strategy fits well under Ishai Tevesh. I feel like an Ishai Tevesh shell can like bring those, like bring all of the like attrition slow game strategies into a good place. Only because people have to cast spells and Ishai is going to get huge. But I mean, yeah, I do think Talion is slow by itself. And I don't think there's enough creature removal to like deal with people who like start to clone it, because it doesn't really do anything early in the game by itself, especially when people are naming two. Then when there's like two or three of them, and then you're like taking 6 damage or 4 damage trying to resolve Thoracle Consult, and your life total is really low, then it gets a little hard. I just feel like Murderbird and Tevesh is just a good place for like all those slow and steady wins the race type effects. Humility is cute. I agree. I don't see it winning a tournament. I feel like that's very slow, and the time limit won't like allow for it. I feel like Talion, this whole attrition, play a couple stacks pieces, protect them, especially because the table will have to like help you, because the table doesn't want anyone. Usually games are like not arch enemy, but like someone has a lot of advantage, and no one's trying to allow them to have access to that advantage. So they'll protect your Grafdigger's Cage. They'll protect your Cursed Totem and stuff like that. And I feel like an Ishai Tevesh shell is probably the best for like that type of strategy. But I do agree, though. I don't think Humility can like win a tournament. It's very, very slow.
Yeah, I'm not saying that the deck wouldn't be strong or isn't like a thing somewhere. But in tournament Magic right now, it's the same concept. Like, you have to bring a deck that can win a game reasonably within the time frame, and like Stax is just not there right now. There's no clock good enough to make those strategies viable. Hopefully, maybe we get something that'll add some diversity, or we'll get a card removed from our format, or an answer that just wipes it all away and lets us reset a little bit. But until then, hard control, which was hard for me to accept, is not really viable. And Stax is just not fast enough. It's too many people to police, and you have to overextend to the point where you shut yourself off.
Facts.
I agree 100%, especially with, you know, we keep mentioning it, which I don't, Max, you can correct me if I'm wrong with this one. Was Festival the first tournament to switch to using 75-minute rounds?
Festival of Nights was the first in-person event to use it. I believe it was also used, it was used the Mox Masters prior for 75-minute rounds. Okay. So we've had four events that have been doing it. Our data, for the most part, shows it's about appropriately the amount of time that we need to give people based on the number of results being turned in and the number of draws per round that are not IDs.
Okay, so now that's on the judge/TO side for you. Jorman, about as a player, how does the 75-minute rounds feel versus the 90-minute rounds?
I usually get lost. So, like, rounds end pretty quick. Like, they feel like they end pretty quick. And some drag, so I don't know. It's, like, really just half and half. I guess it depends on how high I am at the beginning of the round or how fast I lose. But, like, yeah, it doesn't seem like it's much different than 90. It's, like, games still feel like they're ending relatively around the same, or people are playing like the same decks they were when like it was 90 minutes. So I guess games are ending on like turn five. It doesn't really feel that, like, yeah, it doesn't feel that long, but it doesn't feel like that short. Games are ending relatively the same amount of time.
So basically just feels exactly. I mean, I judged Festival, and like, for me, it didn't feel any different. I mean, I was personally more thankful for the 75-minute rounds because I got an extra chance to sit down and stuff like that. But, like, it was nice. It cleaned it up. I wasn't there till the middle of the AM. Like, it was nice. It was definitely a lot nicer than the 90-minute rounds. The other thing that I really enjoyed is splitting it into two-day events for the most part, for when, you know, when feasible, of course. Having half one day, half the other day was fantastic because everybody got out, everybody was fresh, nobody was cranky. Like, I mean, there were some cranky people, but that's besides the point. You know, they're always going to be cranky people when you got 160 plus people. So
yeah, I'm very strongly of the opinion right now that CDH events that are above 64 players, because that pushes them to six plus rounds, should realistically be 2 days, and five rounds with a cut to 16 is still pushing it, because it is an incredibly long day, as we see for Mox Masters, even with the 75-minute rounds. So it's like the reduction in time saves us about an hour and 15 minutes on day one, which doesn't seem like a lot, but it allows us to get a lot of our stuff wrapped in the back end and be a little bit more prepared for the following day. And it gives the players more time to sleep and come back refreshed for a day two, rather than having them string through another 2 to 3 hours of Magic.
So, Jorman, we've been talking all this Magic stuff. Let's get into the real important question. What's your drink of choice?
I don't know. I'm not really that much of a coffee guy. I think I like half and half. So I'm like Arnold Palmer. That's my favorite drink. I like half and halves. First time I had a half and half, I was in like Well, like a good half and half. I was in ninth grade. I was in like a summer camp for a debate. And I was in Baltimore. And it was like half, half and half. I had like iced tea, lemonade, and fruit punch. And that shit was amazing. So I think Arnold Palmer is my favorite drink.
So you were a debate club kid. That explains everything.
Yeah, I did a policy debate in high school. So did Mikey, actually. He was in policy debate.
Huh.
It's funny. His coach actually, I coached alongside his coach a couple years ago. And I think Shree coached me, too, at like a couple tournaments in college. Small world. Very small Damn. World.
Yeah.
That's awesome. It's neat to see like the connections with people and how everybody kind of gets around, you know what I mean? Like how you know everybody, like somebody knows somebody. What's the thing?
6 degrees of separation.
Five steps to Kevin. Yeah, 6 degrees of separation. I was going to say something to Kevin Bacon. You know, it's basically the same thing.
Sure.
So like now you competed in Mox Masters, you compete the in person. How do you feel the difference between online and non-online tournaments are?
I feel like I suck online. This is my first time doing good online. I feel like I can't politic as well. People are like in their house. They're very comfortable. It's hard to politic with someone who's like sitting in their boxers at their computer table. Yeah. They're just like, I'm gonna do whatever the fuck I want to do. Their cat walks across the screen. And the tournaments do still keep that, you know, level of integrity, though. Like, they still have you remembering that you're competing. So there's, like, that. But I feel like it's just a lot harder. People do whatever the fuck they want when they're in their house just chilling. They'll just jam. They'll feed wrist sticks. But then you have the people who are, like, mindful of, like, this is still a tournament. I should play the best Magic I can. Oh, I like online tournaments, though. They're, like, cool. I obviously prefer in-person tournaments. They're a lot more fun. You get to be with your friends, you're in hotels, you're chilling. It's like just a better atmosphere, I feel like. And I get the politic. I like politicking with people in person. I think I'm very good at that part of commander.
Well, I mean, you were in the debate team, obviously, and one of the important things in debating and everything is watching their body language and being able to see somebody's body language in person versus online. Well, you typically can't see somebody's body language online, but in person, you'd be like, oh, I just watched you flick your hand. You have an interaction. I'm going to pass priority.
What's really funny, not to cut you off, Jorman, is I was going to bring that up because Jorman is incredible at reading players, which is part of the reasons that we have such great Magic when we get to play. The other thing is there is a new Magic series coming out by Accepted that is encouraging and pseudo requires a face cam. So you'll actually be able to see your opponents during the entire tournament, which will be much better for watching people's hands during shuffles and such. But also you'll be able to watch and read people again, which is, I think, the biggest thing that's missing from online play right now.
I definitely agree. Taking advantage of that part of the game is good. Being able to just like watch your opponent, see what they do, see them, just watching them thinking in real time helps a lot.
And then knowing their gameplay before they even know their gameplay is also fantastic too.
Yeah, that's a fact. Just like, especially when you just know their deck. You're just like, yeah, these are the play patterns in this deck. You start to get to know local players and such, and it's like, just easy to, I guess, like call cards or like call someone's hand. Like, you're going to tutor here. And then they're just like, yeah, casting light into it. And you're like, yeah, no shit.
You don't say.
I mean, you used to freak out when I did that to you.
That one time where you saved me from myself, even though you could have just let me get blown out. But that's because you knew that I'm a turbo player and I was going to bounce your counterbalance. And you're like, I have you stopped before you even commit to overextending yourself. I'm going to cast this silence. And I was like, how the fuck did Max know what I was going to do before I did it? That was creepy as fuck. I was like, that was a really good play. not allowing me to blow myself out or fuck the game up by counting, by bouncing your counterbalance, that was a very good play.
I appreciate that. Thank you. I try and play good Magic, and when I don't, I'm usually on stream for the world to see my fuck-ups.
I ain't saying shit.
You said enough in private. It's okay.
Hey. It's what I do. You're welcome.
Yeah. I'm very hard on myself, too. I, like, look at things, and then I see that I missed it, and I'm like, fuck me. I'm absolutely the worst Magic player. But.
No, I've seen far worse, trust me.
We all have. So, Jorman, what?
I've been doing this for a long time.
Jorman, what is next for you? What next event are you planning to go to? And what are you taking?
I'll more than likely be at the AK in November. I don't think I'm going to try to go to Ohio and get the last 15 points I need to play in the Invitational. It would be fun, but I'm probably just going to chill, hang back, play some locals. But I think the next big event is probably the 8K in November. I don't know what I'm going to play. I'm going to keep testing out this Wet Jun strategy. Maybe throw a defense grid in there, see what happens. See if I like continuing the gym. There's, like, TNK is good. Kinnan's good. Like, there's just a bunch of good decks. I'm just trying to get out of Swiss and then see what happens in top 16. I feel like I do need the color red, though. I wouldn't go into an open meta without Dockside. Especially an even bigger meta than normal metas, because you just play against more people that'll feed Dockside.
That's very fair. Atlanta is an 8K, and it is set to be 200 players, which is going to be a thing for sure. Not adding an extra round yet, thankfully, but 200 players in a room is going to be interesting. I am probably not ready.
I definitely feel like I also feel like more people will win games. So the more people winning games will disincentivize, I feel like, people from IDing, because if there's a lot of winners, then there's a lot of winning pods. So I feel like it'll the extra like 40 or 37 players will force the upper tier pods to play against each other, which will create a way better tournament dynamic. And it's going to be, like, super fun, I feel like.
For sure. I'm actually excited for that. I'm hoping to see a lot more of that. That's pretty typical. The more players, the harder it is to ID into top. But what do I have to do to convince you to come to Ohio with me so I'm not bored the whole weekend and playing by myself?
I don't know. It's like weird. CDH, just because I'm doing good doesn't mean I will always do good. So it's like me trying to get those last 15 points. I could just go try to play Kinnan and just not top 16. So like,
and then play in the open the next day?
I just play in the 10K and beat all the online players and tell them that I'm better than them. It's more accomplishing to just win the bigger tournament against all the people that flew out there because they won a one Mux Masters. I'm like, wait, but I'm better than you. Not you.
I mean, you're not wrong.
I mean, I think it's totally reasonable to think that you could just go out there and take down the Invitational qualifier and then play the following day. But then to have the fallback of being able to play in a regular event the next day also, which all of the good players will seemingly be in the qualifier.
That's true. I did have a conversation with a couple people at Bonfire that were just like, you should just come. And if you don't top 16, the last chance qualifier, just grind the CDH event that has no good players because they'll be playing the 10K. I'm like, maybe.
It does. It makes sense in my brain, but I have to go for reasons. I'm driving half the judges, so.
When is that one?
That is October 22nd, 21st, something around there.
Gotcha.
Yeah, October 20th, 21st, and 22nd. The last chance qualifiers on the 20th, with the open and the invitational being on the 21st. And the invitational top 16 will be on the 22nd.
I'm not quite sure what exactly I'll be doing then, because all of my plans have been, you know, cast into the wind.
Driving to Ohio. Or Magic just Turf. Drive to Ohio. Just don't question it. Just get in the car, turn the key, and drive. You're even closer than me. So
what's really funny is, I mean, you're not wrong. And what's even funnier about that is, that week, I'm supposed to be in Chicago. So I'd actually be even closer than I am now to where that's located.
And you work remote anyway. Like, easy claps.
Yeah, so the thing is, I just bought a house, and I don't know exactly what I'm going to need to do with the rest of the house.
That's 1 week out of the rest of your life. It's fine.
Congratulations on the house, by the way. Generational wealth, great thing.
Thank you, thank you. It was wild. It's been a wild month. I was telling you guys earlier, I got the call that they accepted my offer middle of a judge call during Festival of the Nights. Luckily, my realtor also plays Magic. So when I said, hey, I'm in the middle of a judge call, he didn't question me. He was just like, yeah, all right, cool. Call me back later. Because I was terrified if I had any other realtor what that question or a judge call. Like, did you get in trouble? Hold on a second.
That's cool. That's a cool realtor. If he plays Magic or they play Magic, that's cool.
Yeah, that's actually how I met him. He was actually part of my play group way back when, back when I first started. And I know he moved to New York and we kind of like lost touch, but we still had a couple of mutual friends. And when I told my one mutual friend that I was looking to buy a house, he goes, oh, talk to so-and-so. And I said, aren't they a realtor out in New York? Because I knew he was a realtor. And he goes, nah, he's out in Scranton. I'm like, oh, okay. So I linked up with him, and here I am. I'll be closing literally on my birthday. So I'm okay with that.
Happy birthday. Here's a mortgage.
Yeah. Happy birthday. Here's 30 years of debt.
Good birthday.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, enough for the chit-chat. Let's get into the thing that the people want, and let's take some test hands. So, first one we got up today, Forbidden Orchard, Volcanic Island, Ad Nauseam, Phantasmal Image, Ragavan, Nimble Pilferer, Finale of Devastation, and Eldritch Evolution. Thoughts?
So, these were the type of hands that I was, like, kind of getting all weekend. I feel like it was, like, one or two lands, a payoff, and then a whole bunch of ways to get dockside. I feel like the hand is definitely mana intensive, and I would only keep this if I felt like that turn to dockside was going to cast Ad Nauseam.
Okay, what position would you definitely keep this turn one? Would you keep this turn four? And in between,
I think if I'm first or second, I'm gonna go to six. I feel like if I'm third or fourth, depending on what decks are in front of me, I'm definitely keeping this. Like T1 Ragavan, make the mirage of like, yeah, I kept the value hand. T2, everyone taps out for their card advantage engine or plays their commander, and I'm just like, yeah, that's cool. Eldritch Evolution into Dockside Extortionist. Try to cast an Ad Nauseam.
And you do that post-combat, yeah, so you have an extra mana available.
Well, that's the only way to get the
turn. Oh, right.
Turn
I
two.
Forget he doesn't have haste. Yeah. Oh, my God. I'm so bad at Magic. I saw a red card. I'm like,
it's okay. You
Dash
respect.
Monkey. Fuck. No Dash Monkey.
All right. Down for another one?
Yeah, I'm definitely down. Let's see.
Right. Maybe I can read cards this time.
Oh, this is hot. Damn, this has no red mana. This is hot, though.
You want to read it off, and we'll talk about it?
Cool, Lion's Eye Diamond, Ancient Tomb, The One Ring, Mystical Tutor, Rite of Flame, Noxious Survival. I like this hand.
But does it do anything?
But does it do anything?
You're on pure hopium, aren't you?
I'm not on pure opium. You mystical tutor for dark rate.
And then you get the one ring down. Yeah. Yeah. So it's turn two, one ring. What's the mana left over?
Turn two, one ring, and then you grind shit to oblivion. Or if we're trying to be spicy. Oh, no, never mind. Actually, can we be spicy? Is this a T2? So, like, the way I look at Turbonaut's hands are so crazy. So, like, I would either... Can you draw a card? Draw a card, Billy. All right, so draw a Witchclaw Talisman. Damn, that makes it even fucking...
That makes it insane.
That's insane, dog. So, like, part of me was thinking, right, Mystical Tutor for Dark... Mystical Tutor for, like, Demonic Tutor... And then play the Ancient Tomb, cast Demonic Tutor, whole priority, crack LED, and then play the Underworld Breach, and then just go for a T2 Breach win. Like, just win the game on T2 off of Breach. I don't think there's enough cards in the graveyard. No, I think you have enough cards in the graveyard to recast the Demonic Tutor. I think the hard part is making the blue, because you're cracking LED for red originally to play the Breach. I feel like the Witchclaw Talisman definitely enables the Dark Red plan. Because now you can go Ancient Tomb, Dark Rift, Witchclaw, activate Witchclaw, crack LED, and I think it's a T2 Nas now, if I'm doing the math yes. correctly.
that's where my head was at. Because you go Morphic Pool, pass the turn, end step Mystical Tutor, and play your LED out, obviously. And end step, play the Mystical Tutor, put Dark Rift on top. Play your Ancient Tomb, play the Dark Rift, play your Witchclaw, activate your Witchclaw. Crack LED.
Crack LED for 3 black. You have 5.
And I think you're pool. One extra mana.
No, I think you have 5 exactly in the pool, and then you just add Nas. And if you can also like put your you don't have priority to put LED back on top with Noxious Survival. So yeah, it was the these are the type of hands I was getting all weekend. It was just like yo, weird obscure hands that are also like T2s.
That's why you won, because you got these weird ass hands that were great.
Yeah, it was. They just the deck is like super consistent. It just like kept just getting there, and I was like, these hands don't get there. And then you look at them a little longer, and you're just like, this just gets there.
Yeah, that's where I am. I'm like staring at this. I'm like, why are we happy about this? This doesn't look like it does. There's no fast mana. All we have is an LED, and we pitch our whole hand. And I'm like, oh. Okay. Yeah.
You're looking at this all wrong, Max.
Dude, I'm looking at this like a Tibbet player, and I'm like, I can't jam a turn one Tibbet off of this. What the fuck is this shit?
Yeah, this has red cards.
I think that's like a lot of players like look at hands and like, oh, it has no mana or like fast mana. And then as a Grixis player, I'm like, I could just get there with rituals and then draw my fast mana off the Nas. Which means my post Nas is better unless someone jammed like an early like silver bullet like Torpor Orb or like Blind Obedience. And then I'm just like my Dockside's off and my fast mana's off.
Right. I mean that's the idea behind a lot of Rogside, right? Is you don't want a lot of rocks in your opener. You really want the rituals because the rocks are free in the deck. And so you're hitting zeros that generate mana rather than ones and twos. So it's really just the turbo Grixis pile with some green cards.
Yeah, losing the Noxious early and the Rite of Flame is probably bad, but like having no fast mana in the early hand means that the Nas is almost guaranteed to slap.
All right, let's pull another one. Okay.
This is
Max, spicy. Max, go ahead and read that.
We have Exotic Orchard, Ancient Tomb, Arcane Signet, Talisman of Dominance, Demonic Tutor, Underworld Breach, and Culling Ritual. Fuck.
So, like, correct me if I'm wrong, but that's a turn two win, right?
I think this is like a mana too short, actually. I think it's like short, like, actually. So, I think. If we go for the draw, wait, you have to draw a card. All right, so the top deck is Eldritch. It does nothing. That's also what kept happening. It's like some hands aren't creature hands, but then, Billy's right. Like, I always have access to my commander. So even if this becomes a turn two Thrasios hand, I still have access to like Teemer Sabretooth Dockside on turn four. So I can go for like a sneaky turn four. If that gets stopped, then I have it on turn five. Or the sneaky turn four can turn into no one had interaction for Teemer Sabretooth. The game is over. But I think this is one mana short of being a T2. You go Ancient Tomb, Arcane Signet, untap. If you go Demonic Tutor, I still think you're like one card short in the graveyard if you crack LED. Oh, no, because you have another card. I think Billy's right. I think this is just a T2 breach.
But, see, I was thinking it was a T2 breach.
If I'm doing the math correctly, I think it's a T2 breach.
Or it's a T2 ad nos.
Oh yeah, right. Well, yeah, the culling rate. I mean, yeah, the culling rate enables itself. If there's more than, if there's six permanents, the game. If there's seven permanents, the game is just over. Yeah, if there's seven permanents, you just and you have one, two of them, the game is done. You just go culling rate, demonic tutor, ad nauseum, and the game is just over.
Yeah, I think that's the only line. I don't really see the breach line from here, but you could correct me if I'm wrong.
So you cast out the breach, you cast out the D tutor, grabbing would you grab brain freeze here?
I think the play is Ancient Tomb, Arcane Signet, then turn two, you play the Exotic Orchard, you tap the Ancient Tomb for one, you tap the Arcane Signet for black, you cast Demonic Tutor, you have a colors in the pool, you play the breach of the Exotic Orchard and the colors, you crack LED for three black. And then you exile Culling Writ, Eldritch Evolution, Talisman to cast Demonic Tutor from the yard. And I think you're, I think you're a blue short because you're cracking LED for three black and it doesn't give you the blue that you need to cast Brain Freeze. You can get two Brain Freeze, you just can't cast it.
Okay.
Yeah, you need to have the Talisman on board, if anything.
I'm glad I'm not crazy by that one.
Yeah, I mean, your knowledge extends to counting to six. After Tivit comes down, you don't
care. Oh, boy. Yeah, I mean, it's fair. It's okay. I can count past that, though. I can count the number of turns I need. The number of turns I need is 12, so. Can we take a second to recognize how crazy it is that I'm happy playing a deck that needs 12 turns to close out the game?
Well,
it's commander damage. It's better than all of us. We just want to combo.
Exactly. And not only that, it's not 12 separate turn cycles. It's 12 turns that you take. Like for Najeela, for instance, that is six combats. And that's lethal for everybody. Six unabated or unbothered combats, and Najeela wins.
So I need to double the number of combats that Najeela needs.
Yes.
Fantastic.
But you're taking your own turns. Yeah. Now, if you were taking 12 turn cycles,
that'd be awful. Yeah, that'd be yes. Rough.
Yeah, like sometimes Najeela could just get there in like a Stax meta. I mean, I've come pretty close myself playing against like a Winota Stax deck, where they're just like locking down the board, and I'm like, cool, I'm just gonna turn sideways with Najeela. Stop me. And I'm just attacking like the other people and throwing one or two warriors at like somebody else. And I'm like, yeah, whatever, it doesn't matter. Like
I'm gonna go open the door for someone. I'll be right back in like a minute.
Yeah, you're good. I'm gonna get another hand going, so. This one's really close. Oh,
the Cabal has a Rowan list. This is kind of gross. Cabal has a Rowan list now.
Yeah. Oh, Rowan? The red-black thing?
Row your damage, yep.
Yeah. This one feels to me like a trap hand, so.
Stop looking. If we're not first, it's fine.
That's what I mean. And not really, because, like, yeah, you're getting a Whirly Tutor to get for Dockside, but what are you doing after that?
Playing your commanders.
Great.
Ooh, I had to change my headset better. Give me a sec.
That's fine.
This is a weird one. T2 Dockside, no payoff. Can't keep it.
Wait. Max, did you hear that?
What happened?
He literally gets back. He goes, this is a weird one. Turn to Dockside, no payoff. Literally what I just said.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, bro, you need some payoff. You can't keep Dockside with no payoff. Someone else will copy and then you just lose.
Yeah, so I definitely want to talk about this one because it's a trap hand, in my opinion. Like, someone's going to see this because Max is like, this seems fine. And I'm like, nah, this is why it's not. And then you come in and you say the exact same thing.
Did I hear anything?
So, yeah, no, so like, anything? Thing about the deck that's really cool is that this is 1,000% keepable because it goes T2 Thrasios. I mean, T1 Thrasios, you have March and you have Red Elemental Blast. But, like, I don't want to play control. So if this is a first or second seven, I'll definitely see a six. If this is like a six and I'm going to five, I'm just going to bottom right a flame and then play control. And then just chill with REB in March until I can find a place to jam Dockside comfortably. But if this is like anything before six, I'm going to see a new hand.
Absolutely. I 100% agree.
This is six. I'm definitely just like bottom right of flame, play gemstone, either pitch March or pitch REB, whichever one I think is more relevant. Probably pitch March, hold on to REB, or probably just like bottom March and like pitch the right of flame, hold up a random mental blast the whole game and just play T1 Thrasios and just pray that I can layer my Dockside in like two turns. I guess that's something else that you get, Max, from like playing green. You can just like play control. You can just be like, I'm chilling. You can just lie to people, be like, yeah, I'm playing a creature strategy, and then you just like jam a Gnaws.
I mean, I feel like the Rockside decks play control half the time because they just bide their time, stop win cons, and then go off. So it's like still the same concept. You just get to lie a little bit better because you're playing green.
Yeah, exactly. That's the cool thing, though. I guess that's the flexibility you have with playing Thrasios, right? Like, I guess that's probably the only reason why you play Wet Jund is just, like, the Brewer's Choice advantage of, like, being able to pivot to as many creature combos. Like, this deck can technically run Kin Basalt. It can technically, you know, like, fit more Turbo Grixis plans, like Necropotence, Born Upon a Win. You also get access to, like, Final Fortune and Crop Rotate into Emergent Zone. So, like, you're doing kind of better than Mardu Core because you get access to Crop Rot, which Mardu only has access to, like, play Emergent Zone and then, or, like, Final Fortune. So it's, like, kind of weird.
That makes sense. I mean, I had a thought and then Billy disappeared. Oh, no. Where'd Billy go? But my thought is, if anybody sits across from a table and gives you any type of brewer's advantage, man, they're stupid. people need to know to respect anything that you decide to bring to a table, like, without fail.
That's definitely a fact, though. I mean, I feel like the best players just choose their cards like correctly, efficiently. Everything is played. I feel like every card is played with purpose, really. So, like, you have purposeful includes, you have silver bullets, you have, you know, staples.
I guess we should get this all wrapped up. What do you guys think?
Yeah, great combo by CDH. It was good.
So, with all that, Jorman, where can we find you? Aside from winning at the top tables.
You can find me on Discord. My Discord handle is Twang, T-W-A-N-G. Big Twang, you know. Same on Moxfield. I don't got the socials up yet, at least not for Magic, but you know, my Facebook is just my name, Jorman Antigua, J-O-R-M-A-N-A-N-T-I-G-U-A. And yeah, you can find me there. Talk to me about Magic. Hit me up. We get deck tech and stuff. It's fun.
Hell yeah. Max, how about you?
If it says Eminence, I'm in there. You can find me. I am Trickbound or Trickbound MTG in just about every space. I will be at the Silicon Dynasty coming up next week, which is only a week away at the time of this recording. At the time this is posted, I will probably be very sad and getting scrubbed out of the event. Then I will be at the Mox Masters Invitational. And following that, I'll be at the CCS Eminence Celebration of Gaming down in Atlanta. So everywhere, if there's CEDH.
And you can find me, as always, here, Commander and Coffee, Twitter, or not Twitter, X, whatever it is now. I don't even know.
It's still Twitter.
It's still Twitter to me, at CMDR underscore Coffee, Corktronimus on Moxfield. Just you'll find me everywhere. I'll be wandering around events when I get to go to them now, because now since I have to, like, do house things, it's kind of confusing for me and I don't know what to do with my life. But other than that, yeah, I'll be at the next Rip and Ship event. I don't know what the next Eminence event I'll be at, but hopefully it's soon. Hopefully it's one of them. If I could swing it, I'm going to, for sure. I don't really know what else. Little delayed on recording this because life for all of us, really, when it boils down to it, between sick and there was like four events, major events, right in a row. So yeah,
it's fine. We just got to double up on this monster taking down too many fucking events in a row.
Yeah, I'm still petitioning for Jorman best CDH player in the United States. Probably. I mean, hell, I'll say it now. Best CDH player in the world. Put him against any Euro. He's going to take him down.
I don't know. Let's check the Eminence win rate percentage.
I'll start with the Northeast right now. I like being one of the best in the Northeast. It's fun. And yeah, it was a delay on this conversation, but it was good. I like talking to y'all. I always talk to Billy and Max about Magic. Billy definitely helps me deck tech and come up with those spicy 98th, 99th, 100th cards. Billy has the knowledge, man.
Been doing this for a while.
I just sit here and advocate for Trickbind.
I mean, it's a good slot. I like Tails End, but yeah, Trickbind's just uninteractable with.
Yeah. Well, guys, I think that's it, because I'm out of coffee. And anybody else have anything they want to say? Get off their chest?
Unban Hull Breacher, hot take.
I'm down for that.
there's a lot of cards that don't need to be on the ban list. I want Primetime back for no reason other than I love Primeval Titan.
That's a conversation for another recording.
It's fine.
But all right, everyone, have a great time, day, night, whatever you're listening to this, and enjoy yourselves.
Yeah. Good night, everyone.